This is Fresh Air. The years between 18 and 20 are turning points in a young woman's life. Susanna Kaysen spent those years shut off from the world in a psychiatric hospital. She writes about those 2 years in her new memoir, Girl Interrupted. Kaysen is also the author of 2 novels. Before writing her memoir, she got access to her hospital medical records. The nurse's report on admission described Kaysen as very depressed, desperate, quite tense and cries easily, although tries very hard to maintain composure, very cooperative, talking at great length of past and present history. Here's a reading from Kaysen's memoir of how she remembers that day, the day she went to see a psychiatrist and ended up in the psychiatric hospital.
Perhaps it's still unclear how I ended up in there. It must have been something more than a pimple. I didn't mention that I'd never seen that doctor before, that he put me away after only 15 minutes. 20, maybe. What about me was so deranged that in less than half an hour a doctor would pack me off to the nut house. He tricked me, though, a couple of weeks. It was closer to 2 years. I was 18. I signed myself in. I had to, because I was of age. It was that or a court order, though they could never have got a court order against me. I didn't know that, so I signed myself in. I wasn't a danger to society. Was I a danger to myself? The 50 aspirin... But I've explained them. They were metaphorical. I wanted to get rid of a certain aspect of my character. I was performing a kind of self-abortion with those aspirin. It worked for a while. Then it stopped, but I had no heart to try it again. Take it from his point of view. It was 1967. Even in lives like his, professional lives lived out in the suburbs behind shrubbery, there was a strange undertow, the tug of the other world. That drifting, drugged-out, no-last-name youth universe, which knocked people off balance. One could call it threatening, to use his language. What are these kids doing? And then one of them walks into his office wearing a skirt the size of a napkin, with a mottled chin and speaking in monosyllables. Doped up, he figures. He looks again at the name jotted on the notepad in front of him. Didn't he meet her parents at a party 2 years ago? Harvard faculty. Or was it MIT? Her boots are worn down, but her coat's a good one. It's a mean world out there, as Susan would say. He can't, in good conscience, send her back into it to become flotsam on the subsocietal tide that washes up now and then in his office, depositing others like her, a form of preventive medicine. Am I being too kind to him? A few years ago, I read he'd been accused of sexual harassment by a former patient. But that's been happening a lot these days. It's become fashionable to accuse doctors. Maybe it was just too early in the morning for him as well as for me, and he couldn't think straight. Maybe, most likely, he was just covering his ass. My point of view is harder to explain. I went. First I went to his office, then I got into the taxi, then I walked up the stone steps to the admission wing of McLean Hospital, and if I remember correctly, sat in the chair for 15 minutes waiting to sign my freedom away.
What brought you to the doctors in the first place?
I wasn't happy. And I felt that my unhappiness was more profound than my peers who were also unhappy. I may not have been right about that. I wasn't a good student. And since I grew up in a very academic community, that was a difficult thing. It's a difficult characteristic to have.
There must have been more than that you were unhappy and you weren't a good student.
Well, not necessarily. I think adolescence is very difficult for a lot of people. It was certainly very difficult for me.
Mm-hmm. You went to the doctor not thinking at all that you'd be institutionalized for a couple of years. At what moment did you realize that that's what was happening to you?
When he suggested that I go to the hospital for a rest, and I said, okay, I would do that, and I said I would go in Friday, and he said, no, you're going now. That was when I realized that I didn't... That I had relinquished my choice in the matter if I were to go along with his suggestion.
Were you with anyone who you could talk to about it? Your parents, a friend?
Well, no, I was there on my own at the doctor's office.
Who did you call when you found out you were going to be staying in the hospital?
I called the person I was supposed to be having lunch with and told him I couldn't make it.
What about your parents?
Well, I had spoken with them in the doctor's office. We had called them. He had called them.
And they thought it was a good idea?
No, I don't think they thought it was a good idea. They were probably pretty upset by it. But they asked me if that was what I wanted to do, and I I thought a 2-week rest sounded all right.
How did the two weeks turn into 2 years?
Well, they turned into 2 years because my workup, which is the period during which they watch you and give you various tests like a Rorschach and, you know, various other psychological tests, that period took about 3 weeks or a month. And by that time, I was so thoroughly acclimatized to the mental patient role and to being in the hospital that when they then came to tell me that I should stay for 2 years, I really had... I was gone from the world. I've made an analogy that it's like being in the army. You just get sucked into another universe, another world. And I was in that world, and I couldn't really imagine going back into the real world at that point.
Could you describe a little bit for us what that universe is like on a day-to-day basis?
Boring. It's very boring. You can't do much, depending on how many privileges you have, you know, how far away from your room you can go or how far away from your ward you can go. You may spend hours just sitting on a hospital ward talking to people, not talking to people, watching television. It's kind of noisy. The food isn't particularly good. You can't have unlimited phone calls. You can't have unlimited visitors. Everything is controlled to some greater or lesser extent, depending on what sort of a hospital it is and what kind of a diagnosis you have and how well they feel you're doing at that point. But my main memories are of tremendous boredom. Boredom and chaos. A noisy environment. I don't think I read a book. I don't think I read more than 2 books in those 2 years, and I currently read about 5 or 6 books a week. So it was too confusing to read.
Was there an element of relief in your life because you didn't have to make choices, all the choices were made for you?
Well, there was an element of relief in getting out of the world and all its pressures and expectations. Yes, there definitely was.
What were the pressures on you then that were weighing down the most?
Well, the pressures were to make a life, to find out, you know, what I wanted to be when I grew up and figure out a way to be that. And I was not having very good luck with that. I mean, I knew that I wanted to be a writer, but I didn't know how you got to do that.
My guest is Susanna Kaysen. Her new memoir, Girl Interrupted, is about the 2 years she spent in a psychiatric hospital. We're after the short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Susanna Kaysen, author of the new memoir, Girl Interrupted. When you were institutionalized, it was 1967. This was an incredibly exciting, turbulent time. And this is a period when you could say popular culture was almost starting to romanticize what some people thought of as insanity. For example, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, King of Hearts. Mm-hmm. They're both movies about, mental institutions where the people who were committed are a lot more insightful than the people who are taking care of them, right? Mm-hmm. It's the whole who's really crazy here kind of question, right? Mm-hmm. And then, like, how many young women in the late 60s just loved Sylvia Plath's The Bell Jar, which was all about her, you know, emotional and mental problems. And there was this almost romance with suicide, I think, for some people in that period. Did you ever feel under the spell of that at all? Were you caught up in that literature or in those movies?
If I was, it was all, you know, blown out the window by the time I got inside a hospital. When you get inside a hospital, you realize that all of that is romanticization and that some of the patients are crazy and some of them aren't, and some of the staff are crazy and some of them aren't, just as you could say the same of the population at large. It's a cross-section of people. I think that the behavior of the patients generally bothers more people than the behavior of the staff. People who have bothersome, irritating, frightening, bothersomely repetitive behavior, particularly people who don't get changed, get locked up. That's who gets locked up. People who drive other people crazy get locked up. So it tended to be that the patients were a little more bothersome than the staff.
What behavior on the part of other people drove you crazy? What drove you crazy?
Oh,
about
people
that?
Who would come up and, you know, talk for 20 minutes about some thing they were hallucinating or some fantasy life they were living that you just didn't want to hear about. Or somebody who was terribly noisy or violent. I mean, occasionally people did get violent, and that was sort of frightening. But mostly just people coming and talking to you about something you didn't want to hear about. That was intrusive, and it was hard to get away from that.
I guess I'm wondering what your parents' reactions were, you know, was it, well, our daughter isn't crazy. We need to get her out of there. Or, wow, it's good she's under protective care now because things were really falling apart.
Well, I don't write about my family in the book. I decided when I realized I was writing a book that I wasn't going to write about them for several reasons. One is just because I believe in privacy. Mm-hmm. Two, because I wasn't writing a confessional book about myself and my own case. I think there are many very good books about that. And three, because I felt that the details of what my family felt and what I felt and what was happening to me inside my head, those details are ways for people who read the book to put distance between themselves and me. That they can say, oh, well, her family reacted like this, and that didn't happen to me, so we're not the same, and this could never happen to me. I could never be locked up. Or she was seeing things in patterns, and I've never seen things in patterns, so I'm not crazy. She was crazy, and that could never happen to me. And I withheld a lot of information about myself on purpose in order to prevent that barrier, which I think we so easily raise against things we're frightened of.
Let me ask you this. Do you think part of the reason why you're withholding that is so that nobody can read it and say, see, she was crazy?
Well, I'm sure people will think I was. You know, I'm not unhappy. That's what counts for me. Whether you're unhappy is really much more important than whether you're crazy. I was unhappy. Now I'm not unhappy. Now, I don't know how much the hospital had to do with it. I certainly think 25 years of life have improved my life. Becoming a writer, which was what I wanted to do, has improved my life. So now the question, am I crazy, is really, it's still there in my mind. But the important thing is, am I unhappy or am I happy? Am I productive or am I stalled? Those are the questions I ask myself.
You were released after 2 years. How were you released?
How, or do you mean why?
Yeah, why?
I think I was released because I was, my behavior was better. I sort of got my mental act together a bit. And I had a marriage proposal. And I had lined up my father had helped me line up a job. And I was able to kind of get a bit of a grip on the practicalities of daily living, which was something I hadn't been able to do when I had come into the hospital.
What was the hardest thing about adjusting when you got out?
I think the hardest thing was learning that nobody wanted to hear about it and that I'd better not talk about it.
I'm surprised to hear that because I would have thought that your peers would be especially interested in hearing about it.
They were terrified. They thought I was contagious. Most people do.
I know I had a friend who I was surprised to hear had been institutionalized, and I was always afraid to talk with him about it because I always had the feeling he didn't want to talk about it, and that, you know what I mean? So... I'm not sure we ever really talked about it, and I was always projecting the reluctance onto him.
Well, I don't know where it comes from. I mean, I was not so reluctant to talk about it. On the other hand, I noticed that nobody seemed to want to hear it. It was so alarming to people, and they felt that I would be reluctant to talk about it. I could sense that they were afraid that I was reluctant to talk about it. And I felt that they were reluctant to hear about it, and I don't know who was projecting what onto whom, but at any rate, it was not something I talked about. It was certainly not a good conversation starter. I learned that pretty young. And it can be a conversation stopper. I think if I hadn't written a book about it, nobody would want to hear about it right now.
Are a lot of your friends finding out about this experience from the book?
Well, the details of it, yes. I mean, nobody that I would call a friend didn't know that I was in McLean for 2 years. I didn't keep it a secret. But it's not anything that I discussed. It was not anything that I discussed. I didn't feel that I could describe it in a conversation, and that's part of why I wrote the book.
Because it was too complicated to describe?
Yes.
Or because you felt this commitment to getting it exactly right so that you didn't misinterpret your experience?
Both. Mm-hmm. Both that it was... I felt that the miasma, the kind of aura of the institution was not communicable in conversation, that it had to be approached in a writerly way. and that it would take more than a description, that it was, that it needed a book. It needed the sort of short-lived but true immersion in a world that a book provides to get across what it was like to be in there. And I don't know, you know, how well I succeeded in that. I mean, it does it for me, but I was in there already. You know, I don't know that it has done that for other people. I think it has for some. That's what I wanted it to do.
Susanna Kaysen, her memoir is called Girl Interrupted. This is Fresh Air.